extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, brought to you by Seven Generation Games. This is Anne-Marie DeMars. I'm your host. I have no co-host because one of my daughters is in San Jose, one's in Boston, one's teaching school right now for Los Angeles School District, and the fourth one is in Santa Monica, probably doing something really important for Seven Generation Games. As I promised the last time, I'm going to talk about things I have learned today. I think this might be a good and educational podcast. What I've learned at JudoCon, what I have learned living in Chile, and what I have learned from the WWE and UFC. So, starting right off there, I went to JudoCon. JudoCon was fabulous. Even if you don't do judo, you would have really liked it, but you wouldn't have got invited because it's an invitation-only list. Last year, there were 50 people it was limited to, but somehow 60 of them snuck in. I think Kenny Brink had something to do with it because he brought kids, and it's really hard to say no to teenagers. He had some really good, nice kids, too. So we're planning on doing it again in LA next November. There'll be 100 people on the invite list. How do you get invited? I believe they looked at it by people who are running judo clubs, first of all, or who look probable to be in the near future. If you had some contact with freestyle judo, that gave you a plus, or the AAU. So what was JudoCon? Well, if you're familiar with Comic-Con, I could say it's like that, but I've never been to Comic-Con, so I have no idea. It was really cool, though. First of all, the people there. Now, when I was young, being a black belt had a character component. So if you were a douchebag child molester, you couldn't get to be a black belt. If you were a drug dealer, I mean, there were actually some criteria. Now, sometimes they were probably misapplied and we don't like you and you didn't get your black belt. But it kind of kept a lot of us, like me, a little bit more on the straight and narrow because we knew that there was a character component. Don't get sent to jail. Don't get sent to juvenile hall. Now, I don't know when it happened, but all of that is pretty much thrown out. And in JudoCon, it was brought back in. So every person that was at this event was either somebody who was a friend of mine that I really respected or somebody that I had just met, but I could definitely see becoming friends and really respecting them. All of them were without ego. And that isn't to say that they didn't have a good grasp on their own strengths. So let me give you an example. James Wall from Wall to Wall Martial Arts did a fabulous section on marketing. And at several points, he said, we're the best at what we do. That when people call up and they want to sign up their son, daughter, themselves for judo lessons, he will say, yes, we offer a women's self-defense program. We have it on these days. It's at a time that's convenient for working mothers or people with small children. We have, you know, 12 women in the class. We have a female instructor. Oh, you're looking to sign your kid up for a class for 10-year-olds to learn judo. Yes, we're the best at what we do. We have instructors with 10 years of experience. We are well known nationally for our judo games. We have a long track record of keeping kids in sports and discipline and motivation, and all of that is true. Now, James would be the first person to tell you that he is not a former Olympian world team member. If you're interested in being a fairly competitive regional player in southern Louisiana, he's your man. And what he said to me, and it's totally true, is that no one ever comes in with their 9-year-old kid and says, oh, I want my kid to do judo because I want them to be in the Olympics. People come in because they want their child to be healthier, to have some friends, to do something productive after school. Women come in because they want to defend themselves. Guys come in because they want to do something to keep from being flabby that's not as boring as running on the treadmill. For what he does, James is truly the best around. And he feels no compunction about saying that. I think that's a good thing. There are people who could be there that could be jerks, but none of them were invited, that could say things like, well, who does he think he is? He's not an Olympian. He didn't win international medals. No, he didn't. But that doesn't make you good at teaching small children. It doesn't make you good at developing regional players that want to come in and do something fun after work and get in good shape.
We'll be right back after this.
My parents love me. They want me to be happy and healthy, to learn and be confident.
Do you think you could do times tables?
Yeah.
You do? Because you're very smart?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do 4 times 2.
The best gift they can give me is an education. With 7 Generation Games, I can play and have fun while I'm learning math and history. 7 Generation Games make games that make you smarter. And you know what? I like being smarter. To get 7 Generation Games, visit 7generationgames.com.
So that was a good takeaway lesson there. Don't be afraid to toot your own horn. That's what marketing is. Don't be afraid to honestly say, I'm good at this. Like, we make educational games, and we make them for kids from 8 to 13 or 14. We teach multiplication and division. We don't teach counting. We have one AR game in Chile. But by and large, we teach multiplication, division, statistics, the part where it starts to get hard. I don't feel bad about that. When somebody says to me, well, I'll do anything for preschoolers. No, we don't. Do you have anything to get kids ready for the SATs? No, not really, other than the basics. But if your child needs to work on multiplication, division, word problems, problem-solving strategies, basic statistics, we're great for that. If you have students that English is their second language and they mostly speak Spanish, we're great for that. If you need to include Native American content in your classrooms, and maybe that's not your forte because you're not Native American at all and you don't really have expertise in that area, we're great for that because we have it included in our math games, because everybody always has used math. So that was a good takeaway from it, that be proud of what you do. And there will be people out there who put you down and say, well, you don't do this. You don't have every possible standard in the world. You don't have science. You don't have that. No, we don't. But what we do have, we're really good at it. That was one takeaway lesson from JudoCon. Another one that has to do with this podcast, Dave Roman does the Judo Pop Chop Suey podcast. And I listened to it when I got back from JudoCon after I had met him, and it's really quite good. And he does it by himself. Well, before I met Dave, I was thinking, well, we did this More Than Ordinary podcast, and it was fairly popular, as, you know, young podcasts go, it's quite popular. But Maria and I have such vastly different schedules, and, you know, it's 5 hours time difference between Chile and Santiago, in Santiago and Santa Monica. So it's been really hard to get it together. And then plus on top of that, getting guests. And I listened to Dave's podcast, and I thought, you know, it is feasible to do one by yourself. And so here we are.
We'll be right back.
Did you know that 92% of U.S. homes have a computer? Yes. Yes, they do. And 43% of homes have a child under 18. Why aren't more kids playing educational games on those computers? Because they suck. The educational games, not the kids. Until now, download Spirit Lake or Fish Lake. Check out Forgotten Trail or Making Camp with no download required. All of our games are under $10, teach math and social studies. Let your child play on a real computer and learn real life math. If you're on Steam, be the coolest aunt, uncle, big brother, or sister on the block and download Fish Lake. The little rugrat can play on your computer, learn fractions, and you can get some peace.
Welcome back to the More Than Ordinary podcast, brought to you by 7 Generation Games. I'm your host, Anne-Marie DeMars, and I have no co-host because Marie Burns-Ortiz is hanging out in Santa Monica, and Rhonda's in San Jose, Julia's in Boston, and Jennifer is teaching middle school. So you're stuck with me. I was with 2 of my daughters in Santiago last week. Today I want to talk about what I learned. In addition to, don't judge things that you have no experience of, which I talked about last time, I learned that as entrepreneurs, as startups, we very often ask ourselves, what am I doing wrong? I'm not getting this huge market viral presence that I'm told I'm supposed to get. I'm not seeing this hockey stick growth where I start out with 10 users and then I have 50 and then I have 1,000 and then I have 10,000 and a million. What am I doing wrong? And all of these other things, like whether it's the WWE or the UFC or some major TV channel, they've got all these followers. Why don't I? Well, and then I go to some of these events and I see the amount of organization and the massive number of people and the money that goes into it. And I'm here to tell you, if you're an entrepreneur, you're not doing anything wrong a lot of times. It's not as if my staff of a handful of people here in Chile could put on a live WWE event or a UFC event, any of those things. You look at them behind the scenes and you see they've got a whole staff of people running social media, that's all they do day after day after day. They have people who are setting up interviews. They have translators. They have all of these things that if you're a small company, you don't have, or you have one person doing five of those jobs. So I think sometimes it's a very unfair expectation we have for startups. And we tell people, well, no one ever changed the world by working 40 hours a week. You know what? Elon Musk can bite me. I really don't think that his message is helpful to people. I think a lot of those people that you look at started out on third base and thought they hit a triple. A lot of them had powerful connections. They got a lot of venture capital money. So if you invest $20 million in a company, of course it's going to get more media. It's going to have more inward links and so on, because they were able to spend $1 million of that on marketing. They were able to spend another $5 million hiring people. They didn't have to tell potential customers, well, we don't have an Android version yet, but we will 6 months from now when we can get our engineers to work on it. So that's one lesson I learned, to feel a little less bad, I guess sometimes I do, about not making progress as fast as we do. And I mean, let's be honest, we've done well. Like, we got into Chile in February and we've increased our number of users 50%. I mean, worldwide from February. So that's pretty darn good. But it's not the 10% month over month growth you're supposed to get. Well, you know, I think that's pretty good with almost no money spent on marketing and sales. And if you want to help us with that 10% month-on-month growth, first of all, you can go to 7generationgames.com /buy, buy a game. You can go to 7generationgames, that's the number 7.com /donate, donate a game, or a whole bunch of games. So yeah, you can help us out. Another thing, just to kind of involve you all here, often I think people don't give themselves enough credit. Like I was just talking about JudoCon, but you may not think of yourself as an influencer. You think of some jerk on YouTube with 10 million views as an influencer. But really, if you, like if you're somebody I know, or even somebody who listens to the podcast, if you were to recommend something to me, I'd be a lot more likely to pay attention to your idea than some random YouTube celebrity or some random musician / athlete. So yeah, tell your friends. I'm sure you got friends about 7 Generation Games, or even if it's not us, about any other small business that you support. All right, and here's a rant. Those big businesses are successful in part because they're big. They have big money, they have big staffs. And I have some friends who I really do like, but they will always pull out that one company or that one person. Well, what about this person? And they had a small staff and they blew up and now they have $10 million. Yes, that may happen, but let me tell you, the odds are not in their favor. The big companies get all that big attention because they are big. And it's like Mark Twain said, you know, the race might not always go to the swift or the battle to the strong, but that's the way to place your bets. So think about throwing some love in the way of those small companies, whether it's buying their products, becoming an angel investor, because that's how small companies get to be big companies, with support from people like you.
You can be too successful.
How so?
Our latest games have parents suggesting we get endorsements from YouTube celebrities, have professional gamers stream us on Twitch. They point out where we aren't the virtual reality level of Call of Duty.
Yet.
The point is, our games are so much more, well, game-like than the average educational games that people forget that what you really should be comparing these games to are math worksheets.
Yeah, I mean, you can have your kids sit down and do math workbooks for 20 minutes, if you can even get them to do that. Or you can let them play Fish Lake, which they'll probably ask you to let them keep playing after 20 minutes.
Or you can play yourself. You know you are never going to pick up one of those workbooks again for the rest of your life. Still, do you remember how to reduce fractions to lowest terms, multiply and divide fractions?
If not, play Fish Lake before Mia or Connor or Aiden or Joe gets home from school and ask for your help.
So, anyway, speaking of things that I have learned in Chile and things not happening all at once. I've been here on and off since February. And when I got here, I did what I always do, which is I worked all the time. I didn't really have time to miss my family because I was taking care of all of the stuff that's involved in moving to another country, the visa, the background check, and moving into a new apartment. And everything was in Spanish, and I was translating everything from English to Spanish. And it took me 8 times as long as just writing in English and meeting with people and working on new games and hiring people. Okay, that was the first smart thing I did. That idea that to be successful, you've got to do the work of 3 people. Look, that's just a way to drive yourself nuts. If you want the work of 3 people, hire 3 fucking people, okay? So, yeah, if investors won't invest in your company unless you work 150 hours a week and have a heart attack, then perhaps they're not the people for you to be involved with long term. So, yeah, when I first got here, I was working all these crazy hours. I hired some good people. So then instead of me translating everything, they could do some of it. They could get back to some of the people. But the other thing that had an impact is in Chile, people work 45 hours a week and then they stop. They have a 9-hour day. People go home. I don't know what they do at home, but I presume they hang out with their family. They go out a lot. I know this because you go out at night to the restaurants and they're packed and people are having a drink with their friends and they're having dinner. That's a different mindset than in the U.S. Now, I know some brilliant, hardworking entrepreneurs here, and they also knock off work at 6 or 7 o'clock and they go and they have drinks with their friends. They go hiking on the weekends. They take 3 weeks of vacation a year because companies in Chile are required to give 3 weeks of vacation a year. And unlike in the U.S., people take it. I've always had the habit of working all day long, not taking a break. I will sit at my desk and eat a sandwich while I code with the other hand. And when I was talking to the guy, his name was Gert. He's since moved on. No, he didn't die. He just went on to another job. But Gert was the manager of the building where our office is. And he said to me, isn't that unhealthy? He thought it was odd that somebody would not take a break and just sit down and enjoy their lunch. That's slowly started to be a change. I did not all of a sudden wake up one day and say, woohoo, I'm going to have work-life balance. But I did, after a few months here, start taking Saturdays off. I started keeping a record of how many hours I had worked in a week. And when I got to 50, I stopped working. So I went hiking lots of places. I hiked up to the top of a mountain in the Andes and sat there level with the condors as they were flying because we're at the edge of a cliff that went down, you know, thousands of feet. I went to Cajon del Maipo, where it looks like, I'm pretty sure it is, a lake made from the glaciers. It's one of those places, if you see pictures of Chile, you'll see it because it's just beautiful. I went hiking in the forest. I went a couple of times to the top of this hill, Cerro San Cristobal, where there's a zoo at the top. I did all kinds of cool things. Went horseback riding with my daughter Rhonda in the mountains. Went up in the snow with my daughter Maria and her kids. That wasn't as fun as I thought. It was way crowded, actually, and they don't particularly like cold. But my point is, I did a lot of things. Just this last month, I went to see 2 movies. I went to see Bohemian Rhapsody with a couple of friends who are like super huge Queen fans. I went to see the new Harry Potter movie with a friend. That's the sort of thing I would have never done before. So for some of you, maybe that's nothing. I mean, what? You go out somewhere with a friend every once a week or every 2 weeks. But for me, it's a gradual big difference from the way I used to do things. I just lately, because of the way my schedule's been, I haven't been taking off every Saturday. Instead, I've been working 6 or 7 hours a day. So it still comes out to 42, 44 hours a week. And I used to be an industrial engineer. So those are standard hours. Now, some of you who say, oh, that's nothing. I work 60 hours a week. I work 90 hours a week. I bet you don't. Let me tell you what a standard hour is. A standard hour, in the industrial engineering terms, is the number of hours something would take if no one ever took a break, no one ever got sick, parts were always there on time, there were never any holidays. So you figure out it takes 5 hours to make, or 4 hours to make a widget, right? So there's 8 hours in a shift, so you should make 2 a day, 10 a week, but that's not what happens at all. So those would be standard hours, that a widget takes 4 standard hours. But in actuality, Joe, the guy that runs that machine, he gets sick one day and there's no substitute. So no widgets are made that day. Then the next day you get a substitute person come in, but they don't come in until noon because they couldn't get there. So only half a number of widgets gets made that day. And then the next week you don't have some parts show up on time, and so nobody can make any widgets. And so you get the idea. So actual hours are the number of hours it actually takes. And generally, actual hours are about double what standard hours are. So for me, I actually measure standard hours. Like if I start working and I work on redoing the website for 3 hours, that's 3 hours. And then if I go to lunch for an hour or I get on Facebook for 15 minutes, I don't count that. And then I come back and I work on another project for 2 hours. And then I leave and go to a meeting and I take the metro there. So that takes me half an hour. So I don't count that. So I might leave my house at 10 o'clock. Let's be honest. I am just not a morning person, and get back here at 7. But during those 9 hours, I've maybe worked 6 standard hours. And then I might do another half hour when I get home, or an hour when I get home. So it's 7 and a half hours. I would bet you that if you actually monitored your time like that, that you didn't count the time you spent talking to another person in the office or going to lunch or going to work and back or waiting around for things, that your work week is significantly less than 42, 45 hours. So check it out and let me know. It's a good way too, and I highly recommend it. I highly recommend recording stuff like that to see where you're spending your time, and is that what you want to spend your time on? So one of the things I learned was it's okay for me to step back and read a book, sit out. I have a balcony in my new place here in Santiago, and almost every day I sit out for about half an hour and drink a glass of wine and watch the sunset over the mountains. It's perfectly fine to do that. It's okay not to spend every minute of every day working. So that's been a shift for me. It wasn't an overnight thing. I started out, like I said, taking one day off a week, and some weeks I didn't make that. And then I gradually started saying yes to things. If somebody said, do you want to go to a movie? I didn't say, oh, I've got to work. I said, yes. So that's one of the things that I have learned in Santiago, is you don't have to work all the time. Really monitor how much actual work you're doing, and then cut yourself some slack.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, 7GenerationGames.com. And that's 7 as in the number 7, GenerationGames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at 7GenerationGames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help a much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.